Told you once, now tell you twice. The way I feel, here's my advice. I told you once, now the way I feel, here's my advice. Now tell you twice. The way I feel, here's my advice. I told you once, now tell you twice.
Happy New Year, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Please enjoy God's gift through His Word and celebrate a new season of 5 years tuning in. You are now listening to God's gift through His Word with Miss T. Drake. It's God's gift through His Word with Tanika Drake. Tanika, tell them about God, girl.
Hello and good morning, dear hearts. I hope you guys are having a great start to your Monday. Happy Monday to you. Well, I got a chance to go and see an amazing play, and I'm going to share that with you guys here today. So I hope that you guys will enjoy. It's not going to be our normal Monday, but I do want you guys to remember to be blessed, motivated, and always aspire to do what the Lord lays on your heart. But before we get started, I want to share what I was enjoying on Saturday night. Karen F. Williams' Black Women Walking, adapted and directed by Kevin Taylor. The Atlanta Black Theater Festival states a masterful combination of movement and digital storytelling. It is a winner best play at the Atlanta Black Theater Festival, as well as an award-winning, breathtaking piece of theater that combines spoken, dialogue, movement, music, and multimedia to bring to life the stories of courageous Black heroines who change the course of American history. This is presented to you by Seek First Entertainment. Please sit back and enjoy, and I hope you will enjoy the play listening as much as I enjoyed listening and watching. It was a powerful play, and I'm so glad I got a chance to be a part of the watching and listening audience. So you guys, please make your ears available and open your minds to this amazing play, Black Women Walking.
The impressive individuals we had chosen to honor through performance took very little breaks while breaking boundaries in their own lives. So in the same spirit, there will be no intermission. This is more than a show. It's an experience, an opportunity to live in a moment together instead of simply capturing. Thus, we ask for no flash photography and that you silence your cell phones as we honor the women whose footprints paved the path to progression. Seek First Entertainment presents Black Women Walking. Let the journey begin.
the trouble, the water. God gonna trouble the water. God gonna trouble the water.
When you see a black woman walking, don't you know she stepped through some stuff? Through sickness and pain, shame and disdain, tribulations, she's had more than enough. Slave owners' rapes, life-threatening escapes, sons, daughters taken, sold to the next plantation. Masses, bruises, whips, all her dignity stripped. This is the place where slaves would gather in secret to practice religious traditions. And this is an early woman minister, like one born in 1766, and simply known only as Elizabeth. Sister Elizabeth, the first black woman to preach in 1808, preached for 50 years, though many her calling to ministry did berate.
Sister Elizabeth, by what and whose authority you speak?
What gives you the right to preach? Are you ordained?
Not by the commission of men's hands. If the Lord has ordained me, I need nothing back. My sisters, you got to know for yourself that the Lord has called you to preach. I tell you plainly, at first, I questioned God when he told me to carry his message. My Lord, I thought I can read just a little bit. How in the world can I deliver a message when I don't even understand the scripture? I'm telling you the truth. I struggled in prayer. And yes, I did. I prayed until I was sure that it was his will. Now, I resigned to sacrifice all for my Lord. Listen to me, sisters. Don't you let any man or woman tell you that you can't carry a message for the Lord when you know God's told you to do it. You go on and preach the gospel in season and out of season.
Such a case against a white man.
Sojourner, your case must now lie over to the next session of the court to some months in the future. What? Wait months? Why, long before that time, old Getty can go clear off with my son, no one knows where. I cannot wait. I must tell my child why he's to be had. Rocked about the streets, pulling clothes, bare-headed and barefooted. Must have been a sight to me. I thought to myself, who will show me any good? Who will lend a helping hand in this matter? Suddenly, I was greeted by a perfect stranger. He said, hello there, how you get along with your boy? Did they give him up to you? I was told it would take months to get my son, but I cannot wait. Then he pointed to a stone house. He said, Lawyer Domain lives there. Go to him and lay your case before him. I think he'll help you, but stick to him. Don't you give him any peace, and I feel he'll do it for you. So I walked in the direction of that stone house as fast as possible, and I didn't get the stranger's name. But when I arrived, I found Lawyer Domain. I told him all about my son, Peter. And he looked at me for a few moments and said, if I gave him $5, he'd get my son in 24 hours. $5? I have no money. Never had a dollar in my life. Then he told me those Quakers and Pop. He said they would walked all those 20 miles back, and I gave all of the money to Lord and Demand. And people were telling me, so Jenna, you should have given the lawyer only $5 and kept the rest to buy yourself some shoes. Well, but I didn't want any money or clothes. I just wanted the sun. And if $5 would get him, more money would surely get him. And surely, 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 after 24 hours, I saw my son. He was brought to the courtroom, and the scars I saw on my feet, he had a bad scar on his forehead and another terrible scar on his cheek. And I was deeply anguished to see him in such shape, but I was glad to see him at all. Lloyd Demain pleaded my case before the judge. I sat in a corner, scarcely daring to breathe. I thought of the enemies I'd made during the lawsuit, and I trembled at the thought of all of those who were against me. Oh God, you know how deeply distressed I am, but please, God, please help me get my son. And when Lloyd Demain's plea came to an end, I stood to receive my son. Began examining him from the crown of his head to the sole of his feet. The calluses over all of his body were most frightful to behold. And his back had welts the size of my fingers. Heavens, what's all of this? Uttered so timidly, it's my master whipped, kicked, and beat me. Oh God, though he was in such wretched shape, I had my child in my hands, free from slavery, and I was the first colored woman to sue a white man and win. The first!
Yes.
Sisters, prayers. Powerful.
Yes,
it is. Powerful. Believe it. I must go speak to the women's suffrage meeting now. But let me tell you this. I gained my freedom by walking away from my master's house. You hear what I'm saying? I did not run away. I walked away one morning just before dawn, and I gained my freedom. Now, there's more I want to tell you about that. I must be off to my suffrage meeting. Sisters, some things you just have to walk away from. You pray and you walk. You walk and you pray. Let others say what they will of the efficacy of prayer. I believe in it. I shall pray. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Yes, I shall always pray.
All right.
Thomas Moss, Henry Stewart,
and Calvin McDowell were lynched in Memphis. And their deaths changed the course of my life. They were the owners of the People's Grocery Store, and Thomas Moss and his dear wife Betty were the best friends I had in town. And their darling daughter Maureen, she was my godmother. After the deaths of these good black businessmen, I began to look deeper into lynching. I thought about Thomas Moss, Henry Stewart, and Calvin McDowell had committed no crime against white women. And raping white women was supposedly the main reason our men were lynched. But my eyes were open to the truth of what lynching really was, an excuse to get rid of Negro men acquiring wealth and property and keep the race terrorized. Keep the nigga down. Yes, that was it. That white grocer across from the People's Store despised being in competition with Negroes. I wrote an editorial about it in my paper, The Free Speech, and part of what I said was this. No one in this part of the country believes the old threadbare lie that Negro men rape white women. If Southern white men aren't careful, they will overreach themselves, and public sentiment will have a reaction. A conclusion will then be reached, which will be morally damaging to the reputation of their women. After that editorial was published, a group of leading white citizens came to my newspaper office, destroyed the equipment and furnishings, and left a note saying anyone caught trying to publish the paper again would be punished with death. I spoke the truth and boldly about white women claiming to be raped by Negro men. Such claims were malicious lies. On numerous occasions on the charge of rape, it was positively known at the time of the lynching that the relationship between the Negro man and the white woman was consensual. No court of law could truthfully charge an assault had occurred. I began doing an investigation into every lynching I read about. And in the course of my investigations, I discovered an amazing record. I discovered that on the charge of rape, it only became rape when it became public. Some people wanted me to stop my anti-lynching campaign, but I would not back down. One white man, a Mr. Slayton of the Slayton Lyceum Bureau, heard me speak once and was enthusiastic about my oratorial skills, describing me as an effective public speaker. He drew up a contract guaranteeing 4 speaking engagements a week at $50 an hour, over and above expenses. But there was one thing he did not want me to talk about. You guessed it, lynching. There was no other excuse for me to appear before the American public except to discuss the outrages of lynching my people. I consider myself an instrument chosen to do this work, and I cannot accept your offer. But Miss Wells, he insisted, the American public will not pay to hear you talk about lynching. Actually, it does not matter what you say, as long as it's not about lynching. Not talk about lynching. What an outrageous offer, I thought. Why, it would be sacrilegious for me to sell out my purpose for a selfish money-making effort. I consider myself a mouthpiece chosen to do this work, and I have told the story of lynching so often that I know it by heart. If you don't remember anything else, remember this. Don't be a sellout. Do not let anyone silence your calling and your purpose.
Come on.
Sacrifice your life for what matters. I would consider it an honor to spend however many years necessary in prison as the one member of the race who protested, rather than be with the 11,999,999 Negroes who did not go to prison because they kept their mouths shut.
All right.
had been tied to laws. Afraid too long. Hungry too long. Foot sore too long. I've got to go free. There is one of two things that I got a right to. Liberty or death. And if I can't have one, then I have the other. No man will take me alive, because I will fight for liberty. And when the time comes for me to go, no one but the Lord will let them kill me. Get up!
and she continued to help others and founded a home for the aged and needy in Auburn, New York. A runaway slave who made more than 19 trips south, and through her bravery, helped more than 300 people escape from slavery. When you see a black woman walking, don't hinder her journey. Let her pass through her visions and decisions. She'll encounter collisions and divisions, but with God's help, her obstacles she'll subdue. Mary McLeod Bethune was a black woman walking boldly with a dream to educate women. Her dream, she did explore and opened a school for girls, now Bethune-Cookman, in 1904.
I've lived for 18 years. And during most of that time, I worked to help my people. For I was my mother's daughter. And the drums of Africa still beat in my heart. They would not let me rest while there was a single Negro boy or girl without a chance to prove their worth. Very early in life, I saw the vision of what our women could contribute to the growth and development of the race if they only had a certain type of intellectual training. I longed to see women, Negro women, hold in their hands the diplomas that bespoke achievement. I longed to see their accomplishments recognized side by side with anyone. Next to God, we are indebted to women. First for life itself, and then for making it worth living. Further, there can be no divided democracy, no half-class governments, no half-free country under the Constitution. Further, there can be no discrimination, no segregation, no separation of some citizens for the rights that belong to all. We are on our way, but these are frontiers in which we still must conquer. We must gain full equality in education, in the franchise, in economic opportunities, and full equality in the abundance. In the meantime, I leave you hope. I leave you the challenge of developing confidence in one another. I leave you respect for the use of power. I leave you faith. I leave you racial dignity. I leave you the desire to live harmoniously with your fellow men. And last, I leave you a responsibility to our young people. If I have a legacy to leave my people, it is my philosophy of living and serving. As I face tomorrow, I am content, for I feel I have spent my life well. I pray now that my philosophy be shared to those who share my vision. In a world of peace, progress, brotherhood, and love. Thank you.
What a legacy Sister McLeod Bethune left us. Think about it. Over 100 years have passed, and Bethune-Cookman and HBCU is still going strong. Not only that, my sisters, we have over 100 historically black colleges and universities in the United States. The sound of a marching band beat. American South in the 1940s through a blending of earlier traditions of military music and minstrel shows with a performance repertoire based on popular song. Did you know the position of drum major at HBCUs has traditionally been dominated by men? But dig this, my sisters. In 2018, the first female drum major at Florida A&M University was selected in that band's 72-year history. Mm. What an accomplishment! Speaking of dignity and accomplishments, one sister's writings were widely acclaimed. She made dust tracks on every road she traveled. Her name, Zora Neale Hurston, an anthropologist, folklorist, and novelist who wrote Their Eyes Were Watching God. Now, she wrote about the black culture, presenting no facade.
ships at a distance have every man's wish on board. For some, they come in with the tide. For others, they sail forever over the horizon, never out of sight, never landing, until the watcher turns his eye away in resignation. Dreams mocked to death by time. But I have been shaped by a chisel in the hand of chance. Bowled down here by a sense of victory. Shrunken there by the press of failure and the knowledge of unworthiness. But it has been given to me to strive with life and to conquer the fear of death. No, I am not tragically covered. There's no great sorrow dammed up in my soul lurking behind my eyes. I do not mind at all. I do not belong to this sovereign school of Negrohood who feel that nature has somehow given them a low-down, dirty deal and their feelings are all hurt about it. I do not weep with the world. I'm too busy sharpening my oyster knife. No, I am not tragically colored. But honey, I'll tell you one thing. The white man is the ruler of the world for as far as I've been able to see. Maybe it's someplace out there over in the ocean where the black man is in charge, but we don't know nothing but what we see. White man throw down a load, tell the nigger man to pick it up. Now he pick it up, but he don't tote it. The nigger woman is the mule of the world for as far as I've been able to see.
Wait a minute, Sister Zora. I know you did not use the N-word. And what are you talking about? I ain't nobody's meal.
Honey, I done been in Sorrow's kitchen and licked out all the pots.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Sister Zora. I sure enough been a mule. I had some good men in my life. Good men, but I didn't have sense enough to appreciate them, but I carried all the bad ones. All that stuff, their mess, just like an old mill.
I've been tired and grief and been buried in the bitter waters. Yes, and then sister. I rose again, like last week.
Yes.
Was 27 years old and
in Chicago. My brother John lived in Chicago too. One day when I was doing nails, John started bragging on the French women. French women fly airplanes, he said. But you nigger women ain't never gonna fly. The men in the barbershop broke out into a wild laughter. John was looking at me to see what I was going to do. I was smiling at him. That's it, I said. You just called it for me. Now that was the day that I decided I was going to be an aviator. I was going to fly. First, I had to take flying lessons. But there was a problem. There were no schools in the U.S. that taught Negroes to fly airplanes. I told my friend, Mr. Abbott, about my ambition to be a pilot. Mr. Robert Sentek Abbott was the editor and publisher of the Chicago Defender newspaper. He told me I had to take French lessons and go to an aviation school in France. And that's exactly what happened. I learned French and went to a flight school in France. The school of the École d'Aviation de France, Cotron. In 1921, I received an international aviation license from the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale. I thought it was my duty to risk my life to learn aviation and encourage men and women of my race who were so far behind the white men in this field. I made up my mind to try. I tried, and I was successful. But I shall never be satisfied until men and women of our race can fly.
A hero, but there were still challenges ahead. She soon realized that the pilots who earned a living were a part of air shows called barnstorming. They did all types of flying stunts for a paying audience. But she needed additional training to be in a barnstorming show. She really couldn't earn a living with the training she had. So she returned to France to get more training. After this training, returned to the United States and began doing air shows. She performed stunts, glides, figure eights, climbs, and looped the loops for thousands of people. She was living the dream, and it felt good. Don't you know? You haven't lived till you've flown.
she's a groundbreaker, a trailblazer, a mover and a shaker, making the road easier for others to follow. Marian Anderson was a black woman walking in. She trod through racial barriers when not permitted at Constitution Hall. She became Metropolitan Opera's first black soloist, as I recall.
Oh,
Howard Smith.
Okay, y'all help me out.
Everybody.
Will you? With the segregation days, when I went downtown, I walked up and down the stairs rather than ride the elevators marked color. Often, I walked a mile from home to work and back again rather than ride the bus, because the buses were the worst of the options. I walked past water fountains marked color and waited till I got wherever I was going. One evening, early December, 1955, I was sitting on the front seat of the color section of a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. The white people were sitting in the white section. More white people got on, filling up the seats in the white section. When that happened, we black people were supposed to get up and give the whites our seats. I didn't move. The white bus driver said, "Let me have those front seats." I didn't get up. I was tired of giving in to the white people. "I'm going to have you arrested," he said. "You may do that," I answered. Two white policemen came in. And I asked one of them, "Why is it that you all push us around?" He answered, "I don't know, but the law is the law, and you are under arrest." I have never allowed myself to be treated as a second-class citizen. You must respect yourself before others will respect you.
Mrs. Price stands sparked the bus boycott. And in 1956, the Supreme Court ruled that segregation on city buses was unconstitutional. Rosa Parks, one black woman walking. And one civil rights leader was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. Fannie Lou Hamer marched to and fro to encourage blacks to vote. And I tell you what that woman went through. It was no joke. Ladies and gentlemen, I am delighted to introduce to you the Honorable Civil Rights Activist, native of Mississippi, Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer. White men came into my cell, and one of these men was a state highway patrolman.
and he asked me where I was from. I told him Louisville. He said, we're going to check this. And they left my cell, and it wasn't too long before they came back. He said, you from Louisville, all right? And he used a cuss word. He said, we're gonna make you wish you were dead. I was carried out of that cell to another cell where there were two Negro prisoners. The State Highway Patrolman ordered the first Negro to take the blackjack. And he took the blackjack. And by orders of the State Highway Patrolman told me to lie down on the bunk bed on my face. So I laid on my face. Then the first Negro began to beat me. I was beaten by the first Negro until he was exhausted. I was holding my hands on my left side at the time because I had suffered from polio when I was 6 years old. After the first Negro beat me until he was exhausted, the State Highway Patrolman ordered the second Negro to take the blackjack. The second Negro began to beat me, and I began to work my feet. Then the State Highway Patrolman ordered the first Negro who had beat me to set on my feet to keep me from working my feet, and I began to scream. Then a white man got up, began to beat me in my head to tell me to hush.
Oh my goodness, Mrs. Hayden. After enduring that terrible ordeal, it's a miracle they didn't kill you.
You know, at one time, I began wishing the inmate would just take one hard and final blow to put me out of my misery.
Did they offer you any medical attention?
You must be kidding. After the beating stopped, I almost passed out. I could barely walk. The guardsman just looked at me coldly. He said, you can walk. So I walked back to my cell where I collapsed.
Oh my goodness, Mrs. Hayden. It amazes me that even after that terrifying jail experience, that you still continue to fight for civil rights.
With God's help, I carried on. You can't stop.
All right.
You got to stand up for what you believe in.
Amen.
You can pray until you faint, but until you get up and try to do something about it, God is not going to put it in your lap. This little light of mine
walking.
The most difficult moments growing up
was being teased by my peers and not accepted to play and do all the things that one wants to do. In the back of my mind, I always worked towards education. Coming from a very large family of 22 brothers and sisters, I was the first child to have a chance to go to school. And the grandest aspect of it all was that I could trade off my athletic ability for the scholarship. And that was how I thought of it.
That's an amazing story. And your accomplishments are phenomenal. You were the first American woman to win 3 gold medals in a single Olympiad. What do you feel is the key to your success as a sprinter?
I think that every sprinter that goes to that starting line, that moment is afraid of losing. That's always there. But the fear that is in the pit of the stomach, it is more of a nervous reaction than anything else. When it wasn't there for me, then that was the day that I might as well not run, because there was no adrenaline. When it was there, I know that I was on target, that I was listening for that sound. I always had the worst start in the history of any sprinter because of my size. And I was the tallest sprinter that ever came through the United States. My first 30 to 45 yards, I was never in the race. So I was always happy they didn't have 30 to 40 yard races. But the farther I ran, the faster I became. And I could always accelerate in the end. And those were the keys to the successes of Will Rudolph. Never the start.
Never the start.
All right.
Okay, well, that's a life lesson right there. Now, before we go to commercial, I know the audience would like to hear about that last race. I believe it was 1962. Tell us about that day.
It was Palo Alto, California, Stanford University, Russia versus the United States. I was running well, but the heart wasn't there anymore. I mean, what do you do when you win all of it? You have to be a little bit hungry to be there, stay there, and stay on top. And this particular day, we were running a relay. We were behind when we started off. And you always think on a staggered start and know on a staggered start, okay, she's going to catch her in the turn, and by the time the time is passed, we're going to be even. But that didn't happen. And then I said, well, by the time they pass it the next time, we'll be even or one step ahead. It didn't happen. And by the time they got to me, I saw that we were behind. And I made myself a promise that day. I said, if you catch the Russian, it's history, retire. If you do not catch the Russian, you'll have to run for another 4 years for the Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. Race that I have ever ran in the history of my career, and to receive a standing ovation outdoors in my own country, which I had never had before, I think it was the grandest moment of my career. I retired that day, and I have never regretted it. To me, my legacy is the youth of America. To let them know that they can be anything they want to be.
All right.
Whether it's by wheelchair, walker, or cane,
and enemy's wiles. Her feet can trod on rocky and rugged terrain.
But she keeps on walking. And you keep on walking too, my sister. Just remember these women who took a stand.
Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Mary Bethune, Ida Wells, they moved by faith and stepped with courage.
Rosa Parks, Zora Hurston, Bessie Coleman, Marian Anderson moved by faith and stepped with courage.
Mother Smith, Fanny Henry, Sister Elizabeth, and Wilma Rudolph, they moved by faith and stepped with courage.
So my sisters, keep on walking when troubles come your way.
Move by faith and step with courage.
Keep your trust in God and always pray.
Yes, move by faith and step with courage.
Speak words of victory and not defeat.
Move by faith and step with courage.
Fulfill your God-ordained purpose and don't retreat.
Move by faith and step with courage.
So,
step with courage.
Step with courage.
Step with courage.
Step out.
Step up.
Step sure.
Step right.
Step through.
Step on.
Step by step.
Black women walking.
Thank you.
Thank you for your listenership. We appreciate all your support over the years. Continue to support God's gift through His Word all year long in 2023. Be blessed and share this podcast with anyone you know for encouragement and inspiration.